listening to the Gator Sports Podcast, brought to you by the Gainesville Sun and Gatorsports.com. This is a USA Today Network production, and your hosts, Graham Hall and David Whitley.
I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by my co-host, David Whitley.
Good afternoon, or evening, or morning, wherever
whenever it is. Yes. Who knows? Wherever the news are, we are. Whenever it happens, we will be here to bring it to you. And you are listening to the last episode, we think, depending on if something crazy happens, the last episode for the next 6 weeks as Florida heads into this slow season in June. We try and catch up on some sleep, get our voices back a little bit.
And there's really not much to talk about probably
really
in the next
much.
6 weeks.
Yeah, unless baseball makes this College World Series run. The softball team makes a Women's College World Series run, which we will find out soon and we will talk about in the final segment. But before we get into all that, we have a major announcement to discuss. Someone who has been a centerpiece, in a sense, of the Florida athletic program since before I was born. 29 years is how old I am. And Mick Hubert, the voice of the Gators, has hung up his mic and retired after 33 years in Gainesville.
It was a bit of a surprise when that announcement came out last week.
I was shocked.
I mean, nobody saw it coming. Because, you know, you figure, gosh, he's been there since 1989, and some voices you just figure will be there forever. And he had said as much that he would be there. He thought it'd work till he's 80, and he's 68 now. So you thought, gosh, that's, you know, in the mid-2030s sometime. And it's not unusual for guys to work into their 80s in that position. I mean, you know, Vin Scully, I think, worked till he was 90-something. And Red Bar, I mean, these old classic guys, I mean, because unless your voice gives out or your eyesight, you can do this job. And he was still at the top of his game. But he just decided it was time. And I think that you're probably your former kindergarten teacher had something to do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. Judy Hubert, Mick's wife, was my kindergarten teacher. And I got to be honest, I'm sure I wasn't the most well-behaved kindergarten.
I find that easy to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And I was just, you know, I wasn't about nap time. I'm sure I was a little rebellious.
Now you are.
Now I am. Yeah. Whenever I can. Oh my God, what was I doing back then? But at the time, I didn't know who Mick Hubert was. I knew who Mrs. Hubert was. Mm-hmm. And she was one of my favorite teachers of all time. And it took, I think, until I was in middle school to learn who Mick Hubert was, actually know the name behind the voice, and to realize, oh, wait, that's the husband of my kindergarten teacher. So I always knew Mick as someone totally different. He was the husband of one of my favorite teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously I get into high school, get into college, and I understand not just the legacy that he is building here, but the amount of influence that he has over people's memories. And what I mean by that is they associate individual plays with his calls, his voice, so many plays. From James Bates, Steve Spurrier, Chris Doering, to the time me growing up here.
Yeah, and you mentioned this earlier off air that somebody was at his side the whole time.
Yeah,
and before the games, after the games, and just lending the family support that you need in that position.
Yeah, and Judy and Mick now are going to move from Gainesville to Sarasota, and again, glad that they're not doing it at 80, because I'm sure that they have made, and she especially, has made countless sacrifices for him to do what he's done for not just 33 years, but getting to the point, building his career early on, making the move to Gainesville from Dayton, Ohio. It was countless sacrifices, and I'm sure that she has been waiting for this moment while also supporting him, showing up at every men's basketball game, every event that he called, as you said, staying there until he finished the interviews after the game, and then would often get up the next morning, sometimes 5-6 hours later, and go teach kindergarten at Oak Hall. And just for them to now be able to enjoy their lives together and not really see him devoted to the grind and working until he may lose his voice, or it may become a point where we're talking about Mick Hubert as, oh, do you remember how great he was?
Yeah.
And he's going out on top.
Yeah, he said he didn't want to have the conversation where that Scott Stricken calls him and says, Mick, you're doing good, but you just sort of lost your fastball.
Exactly.
You always want to leave too soon than too early. And that's what he's done. And I think it really struck people, you know, suddenly he's gone. And it's just,
it's
a jolt to people because, as I said, you know, the position he had was really a rare one when you look over history. That, I mean, Otis Boggs and us old guys remember Otis. He was at the end when I was coming along. And he, I think he started in 1939 or 1940 and had that job till like 1980, right?
Yeah.
And then David Steele came in and he did a good job, but then the Orlando Magic got a franchise, and it was just too good of an offer. And he was a basketball guy, and you know he could have been Mick, but you know he basically became a legend in Orlando. He just retired because he was there for the last 30 years. So it's when you think about that, since 1940, that's 80 years. You have three voices of the Gators.
Yeah, and Gene Deckerhoff retiring to FSU. Yeah,
it is. There's no connection there, but it is really weird. And you know Gene, of course, has also been the voice of the Tampa Bay Bucks for like the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And you know he's a little older than Mick, but he's also a guy that it's just going to be weird tuning in the radio this fall for both FSU and Florida fans and hearing two new voices. And you know, you've heard names thrown around. I you know James, but who knows what they will do on that? But whoever it is, it's going to be. You know, I don't envy the guy because even Mick, you know, he was saying when he first got here, people. You know, I don't like you. There's always an adjustment period, and no guy is going to be as good as the guy before in a lot of people's minds. Eventually, he will be like the guy who they hire. You know, if things go as they hope, 30 years from now, people are going to say, "Man, that guy was a legend." You know, now they've had four voices in 120 years, and you know, I pity the next guy. But you know, whoever it is at first, you know, there's going to be it's like the new kid in class. It's like, all right, we got to see what he's made of.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. I think that a lot of people understand what it's like to step into someone's shadow, certainly. And Mick has had some people at his side who have been developing in that sphere alongside him. Mentioned James Bates has done a lot of work with SEC Network, stayed around UF campus. Jeff Cardozo, I think mm-hmm. that's a name that immediately comes to mind for a lot of people. He's been calling baseball. But you mentioned also how short of an announcement this was. Mick announced on Thursday of last mm-hmm. week that he would be retiring at the end of the upcoming Florida baseball mm-hmm. series with South Carolina. He gave people about 3 days to get their affairs in order emotionally
right.
and to grapple with this. And if they really care that much, make any last-minute travel plans to be there for his final game. It was very, I think, jarring for a lot of people how quick of an announcement that was, because he didn't really want to make it about himself. He didn't want to have this drawn-out retirement party with all these emotions. He kind of wanted to just mm-hmm. finish the work and leave. But it had me thinking. I mean, when Becky Burley announced her retirement, she did so at the beginning of that spring season and then gave everyone 5 months to see it all unfold. You know, it's kind of like if you go on and watch one of your favorite bands and they're finishing up with like three shows to go and they're like, oh, by the way, mm-hmm. we're done after this. You know, they don't give anyone, they don't bill it as a final send-off tour.
Right.
It's just business as usual until one day it's not.
Yeah, and it was jolting because I had to reread it too because I thought, all right, well, he will stick around another year because you know, there was just no sign that he wouldn't. There was no indication he was losing interest or losing his voice or anything like that. And then, wait a minute, South Carolina baseball? It's not even going through the playoffs?
Right now? Yeah. They could host a regional here right. in a couple of weeks.
But I think that speaks to Mick, you know, that there's just, he didn't want to be the show. He didn't want a big hoopla and said, I just, you know, I'm going to exit stage left gracefully. Thanks for the memories. Love you guys, but you know, it's time to turn the page.
Yeah, there is something I definitely respect about that. Yeah. I think that he's going to leave a huge shadow for whoever's going to fill it, and his legacy will live on for a long time. Luckily, we have those clips to always remind us of Mick's voice. If you ever forget what it sounds like, you can just pull up the millions of oh my's out there and the buzzer beaters that mm-hmm. he's been a part of. But now we're going to talk a little bit more about who is arriving in Gainesville. And I'm not talking from a play-by-play or broadcast center. We're talking about recruiting. Mm-hmm. We're talking about football recruiting and men's basketball recruiting when we come back after this first break.
I'm Blake Topmeyer, and this is SEC Football Unfiltered, a new podcast from the USA Today Network. Each week, we'll discuss the hottest topics that matter to the passionate fan bases of the SEC. I've covered the SEC for 8 years. As for my co-host, longtime sports columnist John Adams, let's just say he's got a few decades on me.
Not as many decades as some people think. Contrary to popular opinion, I did not cover General Nealon. But I did interview Bear Bryant, and I interviewed Nick Saban, and I covered Archie Manning and Peyton Manning.
More insightful interview, John. Bear Bryant, Archie Manning, Steve Spurrier, or Johnny Majors?
Got to go with Steve Spurrier there. He's the great quipster.
SEC Football Unfiltered debuts this summer. Let John and I be your tour guides from the season opener through the national championship. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back with the Gator Sports Podcast. I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by my co-host, David Whitley.
Hello again.
And now we're going to talk about Billy Napier's army that he is building in Gainesville. He's talked a lot about the need for talent acquisition. We've talked about who Florida has been targeting, some guys in the portal. They've missed on some defensive tackles, some guys that headed elsewhere. But UF did get a valuable addition over the weekend in Arizona State transfer wide receiver Ricky Purcell.
It could be Pearsall. We're not sure.
I need him to tell me.
We were going to call Mick Hubert and ask what he said, but he said, I don't work here anymore, so I don't have to get it right.
Above my pay grade.
Whatever it is, Pearsall, he's a key addition.
Yeah, and I know I learned Princey Umanmielen, so I'm pretty sure that I can learn his last name. But right now, we're going to just refer to him as Ricky P. A valuable addition for this Florida pass-catching unit. We've talked often about how Florida lost five of their top seven pass catchers from last year, whether that's Kamari Gamble, whether that's Jacob Copeland, two guys that transferred to UCF and Maryland, respectively. Florida needs guys to come in. Their leading wide receiver returning was Justin Shorter, who hauled in just 41 passes last year. Well, Ricky at Arizona State, with Daniels as his QB, hauled in 48 passes last year for 450 yards. He was an impressive wide receiver. He looked good, incredibly. I think he has a chance to come in and start in the slot right away. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that may mean for Trent Whittemore. Maybe they're going to have to find some way to get both those guys on the field. But it gives Florida a valuable addition for their pass-catching unit when really I think that was one of the big question marks coming out of spring. You noted it all the time, David, about how it was one of those positions that may let the team down regardless of who was quarterback because they didn't really have a big-time guy unless that was going to be Justin Shorter stepping into this all-time role.
Yeah, he's a nice addition. You know, from what I've read and little I've seen, you know, great route runner. He reminds of a good slot guy. You know, ideally they would have gotten a home run hitter. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy yet. But and they still hope that maybe some of the young guys might develop into that. But I mean, he is just one of those glue guys that they will need, and he's proven it on a D1 level that he can do this.
Yeah, I think that this is different than getting someone from a Coastal Carolina or something like that. There were other Pac-12 schools that were after this guy. Oregon really thought that they had a good chance at getting Ricky to commit and stay inside the conference. I mean, it would have meant less of a upheaval in his life going from Arizona State to Oregon. But Florida ends up getting him. We've talked often about the ties that the Florida coaching staff has to Arizona State from when Napier worked there as quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator back in, 2016 before going to Louisiana. And so there's a good chance that they had a familiarity on the recruiting trail.
That or, you know, you think Emory Jones went out there and you know, you sort of wonder, did Emory go out there and put in a good word or did he go out there and watch a couple of balls sail over his head and say, maybe I need to go to Florida where Emory came from?
Yeah, you know, I wonder how much he got a chance to see of Emory Jones already, knowing that they kind of made a swap. Someone made a joke on Twitter that was like, so this is the player to be named later in the Emory Jones trade. I mean, that's kind of really what it's like these days in free agency. You kind of want to have a relationship between programs where, you know, guys are going to hit the portal And often they're going to look for advice from those around them. So maybe he does reach out to Emory Jones and says, hey, what is the program like at Florida? How did you feel about the program? And Emory's a stand-up guy. I wouldn't be surprised for him to say, hey, I spent 4 years there. I graduated from there. Billy looks seems like he's doing a really good job. It just wasn't the spot for me. I wasn't going to have a chance to really be the starting quarterback as much as I would have had a chance elsewhere to do that. You have an opportunity there. I've seen what the wide receivers are like, what you said. Maybe that those conversations are happening behind the scenes. It would just make sense
for
him not to burn bridges.
Yeah, when we get a chance to talk to Ricky P in a few weeks, we can find out if there's a backstory to this. But at the very least, you figure he didn't, you know, the Emory didn't go out there and trash his old school. And that would be typical because he's a character guy.
Yeah. One more football recruiting note we have to mention because I mentioned Billy Napier's Army. Preferred walk-ons. He says he wants at least 25 in the building, guys who are able to make up kind of a third unit, that scout team that we love mentioning. I don't know if they'll ever see the field, but, you know, look at spring. What happened?
Yeah.
Noah Keeter, a walk-on. Multiple guys who were walk-ons have contributed. The latest one to commit to the Gators is Nicholas Flynn, a 6'4", 310 offensive lineman out of Lake Forest, Illinois. Did have a couple scholarship offers. Butler offered him. New Mexico offered him. Louisville and Florida did their due diligence, but never extended a scholarship offer. Was ranked as a two-star prospect by 24/7 Sports. And who knows with offensive linemen? A lot of these guys that get scholarships are three stars, and they end up becoming these great guys. But now Florida has got a guy who is turning down a scholarship offer to go to a place like Butler, and is going to be a preferred walk-on arriving on campus in the next month. So that's actually a pretty valuable addition, if you ask me, for the Gators, because I don't think you can ever have too many offensive linemen, at least from a practice standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, it can't hurt. I mean, there's not much risk here because being a preferred walk-on. Is there such a thing as a non-preferred walk-on?
I think that's going to be someone who doesn't really get a guarantee before they enroll. Because if you're going to that school, you want some type of guarantee that you're going to be able to be part of the program, but you're going to have to pay your own way here. Non-preferred walk-ons are someone who was already on campus, enrolled, and then they post that flyer around campus and say, please, we need bodies, please, we need bodies. Who can play? And then you're like, okay, well, I can do that. And now you're just a regular walk-on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it says something for the kid because he could have gotten a full ride probably at you know, a lower division school and stuff. But he said, no, I'd rather go to Florida and play at the top and see what I can make of myself. And, you know, he's got the size and, you know, he may develop. If not, at the very worst, he's a good body to have out there.
And he's getting an education. You know, I think with NIL, I've talked about this before too, there's going to be some ways that NIL is going to help offset some of these attendance costs, especially for walk-ons. And if you can, obviously you can't promise that to prospects ahead of time, but when players are seeing things like the Gator Collective and the Gator Guard and millions are being talked about, I think that when you're a walk-on, you're more confident that you're going to have a chance to recoup some of that money in a sense down the line. And that is just one of those, I think, trickle-off effects in a sense of embracing NIL like Florida's been doing.
Well, you know, BYU has a program where they will, you know, all their walk-ons got full
we'll
scholarships.
See how long that lasts.
I know, especially I was thinking BYU.
Yeah, saying the
but
loud part.
Yeah, if we will go that far, I mean, in a way it speaks highly of BYU because generally, you know, you can hope that a walk-on will turn into a star, and occasionally they do, but basically these are just good kids who will help the program and be sort of behind-the-scenes success. So whoever is bankrolling the BYU thing, you know, they're not paying big money for the, you know, maybe the Arch Manning type. They're just, you know, helping these kids who are really sacrificing out there and don't get much in return other than a helmet and you know, some cheers on Saturdays to sit on the bench.
Yeah, that is surprising to me that BYU is kind of embracing that because you're giving up a little bit more freedoms than a normal college student.
They got to ride their bikes to the games and the whole thing.
Oh, man. Before we take this final break, though, we got to talk men's basketball recruiting. Florida coach Todd Golden had two scholarship spots available, and he has now filled one of those remaining two with a valuable addition that many people kind of, David, thought was like a guarantee in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I never got that. It was reported very early on that the Gators expected to land Riley Kugel. Gene Fournette at Florida Times Union came out and did a full feature and said that Riley Kugel was expected to land in the class as one of the guys that Florida thought that they would add as a high school signee. It made sense. Corey McRae, one of the assistant coaches brought to Gainesville by Todd Golden, was the lead recruiter for Kugel while he was at Mississippi State on Ben Howland's staff. Kugel signed with the Bulldogs back in November of last year, but when Howland was dismissed, Kugel asked to be released from his signed letter of intent, as did Malik Reynou and as did Reed. We've seen this time and time again. And then began a two-month-long commitment. LSU, which hadn't really recruited him before, came into the picture, offering playing time. Matt McMahon built a relationship with him. But then Kugel was also pressed hard by former Florida coach Mike White, who, again, promising playing time, a little bit more of a void at the two-guard spot. Not really a lot of SEC caliber wings right now. Yeah. Kugel could come in and start as a freshman. So Florida really had to recruit him once again, all over again. And you saw that push on social media from several coaches. You saw multiple players talking to Kugel as he had his official visit at Florida. This really, I think, could have gone either way in a sense. I could never fault a player for choosing playing time and trying to make it to the NBA, especially with how many guys are one and done. But the Gators end up getting their guy in Kugel. He announced yesterday at 6 p.m. that he was committing to Florida and giving Florida their 12th scholarship player, a huge addition, and he has some familiarity with Florida's other signee, Denzel Aberdeen.
Yeah, both Dr. Phillips,
yeah,
high school guys, and that, you know, that's a really good program. They put out a lot of great football and basketball players over the years. And so, the, you know, that's a good pedigree, and there's so many unknowns with this. You know, it's such a makeover from last year, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes of it because you see these guys, and you know, every team you can sort of like fill in the blanks and say, yeah, this guy's going to be. You don't really know, but you know, he has done a pretty good job of putting a class together. It would look like just proverbially on paper. And as you said, there's still one left, and they really need a big guy.
Yeah, I think that they are going to go into the front court somewhere. They've been in contact with several prospects that are in the transfer portal. I would be surprised if they got a guy from the high school ranks or even the JUCO ranks. They need another guy who can play the four spot for this team. CJ Felder is coming back from an injury. I think that just who they have, Jason Jatobo as well, Colin Castleton, I mean, all those guys suffered some injuries late in the season that are requiring them to heal right now. Getting someone else who can maybe shore up your line in the post would be huge for this team.
They really need that because, as you said, I mean, CJ Felder, he was hurt, but you know, he's not going to be a dominant player. He's a good role player. He can help you. Jatobo, you know, he wasn't even in the rotation early, but then he showed he once Castleton went down, you could start seeing some potential there. And, you know, hopefully he's over the whole eye injury and all that. So he'll be good to have. And of course, Colin, we all know about, you know, he'll be a, you know, bulwark down there, but they really need another big body down there.
Yeah, we'll see how that happens. I would be surprised if they haven't filled that spot in the next 2 weeks, just with summer workouts coming out and wanting to get everyone on campus there by that second week of June, if not sooner. So we'll be following that. We'll certainly be bringing any updates for you on Gatorsports.com and in the Gainesville Sun as Florida finishes filling out the men's basketball roster for the inaugural season for Todd Golden in Gainesville. We are going to take this final break, and when we come back, we are going to talk softball and baseball as they continue their NCAA tournament push for softball and look to make the postseason for the Florida baseball team. We'll be right back after this break.
USA Today's Florida Sports Network covers the Sunshine State better than anyone else. We have reporters and columnists covering Florida, Florida State, and Miami, the Dolphins, Jaguars, and Bucks. Like NASCAR, we've got you covered. We also provide the most comprehensive high school coverage available, and so much more. In fact, we have 17 news sites that encompass the state. Hi, I'm Tim Walters, host of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. Each week, this podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. From Pensacola to Jacksonville, to Palm Beach to Naples, and all points in between, we've got you covered. The State of Florida Sports Podcast can be found wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as on any of our state news sites.
And we are back with the final segment of this week's episode of the Gator Sports Podcast. I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by my co-host, David Whitley. And now we got to talk some Florida softball and baseball.
We are down more or less to a final two. Well, track is still out there, but the real interest this week is on the diamonds.
Yes, absolutely. There was a lot of interest. We mentioned baseball. Let's actually, you know, start there and recap, because we talked about Mick Hubert's final series that he called. It was Florida baseball. It was a series that began on Thursday, and Florida got that quick win, ends up winning, I think, 13-1. When it gets to double digits, I forget which one comes after that one there. And Florida made quick work of the Gamecocks, was never really in doubt, and then wins the series with that 8-0.
Mick went out on a winning, well, actually, the last game they lost, but they won the series. It was like, I think, their fourth series win in a row after that Tennessee cataclysm when we thought that all was lost about a month ago. And all is not lost.
Definitely not.
As we speak, they are in Hoover and preparing for the first game, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be certainly be interesting. And not only was Florida contending with the Gamecocks this weekend, they were contending with the weather, as they are right now in Hoover, Alabama, as the weather has delayed that first game there in the day, the 10:30 game. There was a 2.5-hour weather delay in the Saturday game against the Gamecocks. Florida ultimately couldn't rally after it, falling 4-1. To South Carolina. South Carolina had runs in the first, second, and third inning, and then Florida couldn't get anything on the board, even though nine guys got walked. And it was an interesting situation, certainly. I was across the street. I know that you, David, were taking in baseball. Mm-hmm. I was across the street at Florida softball as the Gators were hosting the regional with Canisius College, Wisconsin, and Georgia Tech all in attendance. And the rain was a pretty dominant theme as well. Florida outlasted it in Friday and Saturday. Saturday was a nearly 4-hour combined delay. But the Gators won three games in as many days and now are hosting the Super Regional.
They got to get by Virginia Tech, right?
I'm sorry. Now they turn their attention.
Right.
Yeah, to Virginia Tech.
Which, you know, that could happen. I mean, they... You know, you never want to predict a win, especially as unpredictable as softball is up there. But if they get that, hey, they'll be back home, and we'll have something, you know, to fans go out there and look at and talk about. If I was betting on whether baseball or softball would host a regional, a super regional, my money would be on softball at this point.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that there was a lot of, you know, we used the term doom and gloom a little bit earlier. You know, when softball was beating up on each other, all these SEC teams were just wreaking havoc on everybody. I think there were a lot of people who started to think that, oh, Florida softball's not going to make it. But now they get out against the rest of the field and leave the conference, and I think you can see just how dominant they really are. But yeah, I didn't mean to jump the gun on that Virginia Tech game. That's going to be extremely, extremely tough. It's sold out there in Blacksburg. Florida has a tough game, certainly, against a Virginia Tech team that had to beat Kentucky twice. And maybe Florida can take advantage of the fact that they're a little bit more well-rested, and the Hokies had to throw a few more arms this weekend than the Gators did.
Yeah, and you never know with this team, because they don't have the dominant pitcher, where you roll somebody out there and think, okay, you know, just get a couple of hits, we're good. But for them to be in this position right now where they, you know, where we're thinking College World Series, you know, that makes it a successful year right there, although – you know, there's that Gator standard where you got to get there and win a couple of games. But as iffy as this team was looking, you know, same sort of like ditto with baseball, as if he was looking, and now, you know, they're in the mix anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite with baseball and softball in a sense. You know, softball has such great arms to close the game in Natalie Lugo and Riley Trilichek. And, you know, I'm not to throw any shots at Elizabeth Hightower. I think that she's great, certainly. But aside from them really on the mound, you know, Florida, if they pick up an early loss and have to go deep into the bullpen, you know, it could get a little bit interesting there. Certainly there with baseball, Florida really has had guys step up at the starting spot this year, especially with Hunter Barco going down. Give Brandon Sproat a lot of credit. Brandon Neely, certainly. I thought Fisher Jameson has looked really, really good at the end of the season. But
yeah, we were stunned. One of those games, they had no walks.
Yeah.
And that hadn't happened since, we think, the game where they hit eight batters.
Yeah.
One game. So if those two, the two Brandon, two freshmen, can keep it going, because you've seen they have matured quickly, Florida's got a shot to surprise some people.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised when I was doing my work putting together my all-SEC teams last week. I was, maybe it just kind of flew under the radar or took me by surprise, but Wyatt Langford was having a historic season,
yeah,
really right under our nose. I mean, we were writing about his home runs, him being moved to the leadoff spot, a lot of big picture type things and how he would come up with critical hits. But I didn't realize how many categories he was in the top five in SEC baseball until this weekend, when he once again has a dominant series and surges up and takes the home run lead over the SEC, and all of a sudden he is this all SEC outfielder. And he really was not on my radar, I got to be completely honest, just with how many talented outfielders there are in the SEC. I was kind of shocked that this guy was right under our nose, but that's what I think winning, that's where winning comes in. Because when a team is not winning, it doesn't matter if you are dominant at the plate. I mean, you're not going to get the acclaim that you deserve.
Where people don't notice you.
I mean,
it was sort of a blanket condemnation of how good are the Gators doing this year.
Yeah.
And it was, meh, wrote them off. But, you know, when Sully tweaked the lineup and put him and Sterling Thompson in the top two, and that really juiced things up. And then, you know, Jed Faven had a slump, but he seems to have been coming out of it.
Yeah.
So, we will see by the time, next week when we talk, but we won't talk next week. In 6 weeks from now, we will definitely know how it turned out. But let's face it, all we'll be talking about then is football.
Yeah. Unless something crazy happens, yeah, we are going to take it, like we mentioned, a 6 week break here. Come back right before SEC Media Days. That doesn't mean we won't be working, though. David is, I think, headed up to Destin to cover the SEC coaches meetings here.
That's
in a couple
right
of weeks.
The main event, of course, will be Jimbo versus Nick.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Bring the gloves, right? And I'll be providing baseball coverage, softball coverage. We'll see if Florida gets through Virginia Tech and ends up hosting that Super Regional. If so, I'll be back out at Katie Seashell-Presley Stadium. We'll have baseball coverage throughout the next couple of weeks on Gatorsports.com and in the Gainesville Sun. David is continuing to knock out his columns, so make sure you read those as well in the Gainesville Sun. We're not going anywhere. We're just taking a break on here.
Yeah, we won't pull a Mick Hubert on you. We won't just vanish in 2 days.
We won't.
People might wish we did.
Yeah, and we certainly, if we did, you won't remember us like you did Mick. So we're
going to
try and keep establishing a legacy here at the Gainesville Sun. But for now, we will be off for 6 weeks. We'll talk to you soon. Y'all take care until then.
Adios.